Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On Podcast, where we talk about issues affecting veterans after they get out of the military. Before we get started, I'd like to ask a favor. If you haven't done so already, please rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts. If you've already done that, thank you. These ratings help the show get discovered so it can reach a wider audience. And while you're there, click the subscribe button so that you get notified of new episodes as soon as they come out. If you don't use Apple Podcasts, you can visit driveonpodcast.com/subscribe to find other ways of subscribing, including our email list. I'm your host, Scott DeLuzio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey everyone, today my guest is Robert Dabney Jr. Robert runs an organization called Vet Park, and he's here to talk about his background, his military background, and what Vet Park is all about and what it does to help out veterans. So welcome to the show, Robert. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your military background?
Hey, Scott. Thank you for, first of all, just inviting me and allowing me to be here and to share a little bit of my story and what I hope to do for our community. And what I hope our efforts will do, of course. So I'm Robert. I grew up in Memphis, Tennessee. I joined the Army at 18, 2 weeks after high school. I was in basic training, one of those stories. And I came in, the recruiter, they offered me a really good job. I wanted to join the military. They didn't have a hard job with me. I wanted to join the military. I wanted to do something outside of the neighborhood I was in. And he offered me, or he told me I could become a computer, some kind of internet computer specialist or something. This was in 98. So it wasn't internet, but it was computer technician or something very, very nice. And I was like, yes, I want that one. And he knew that I wanted to leave, though. I didn't want to, you know, stay around the summer and end up getting in trouble or something. So he told me that wouldn't be available until maybe 6 months or 9 months in the future. But if I wanted to leave early, and he knew I did, he had some jobs for me. And so he went through the jobs, and I wasn't as easy as he thought I would be. And finally he got to a medic, becoming a medic. And it kind of piqued my interest a little bit. And so I asked him about it. And I remember his promise to me. He said that you would be working in the hospital, in air conditioned, full of females. And I was like, that's what you can sign me up for. I want to do that. Yes, thank you.
I'm not sure if there's any 18-year-old guy that would turn that job down at that point.
Yes, no, not at all. And I was like, of course, yes. Why would you even ask me? We should have started there. But I never worked in the hospital. I was always in the field with the grunts and with the tankers and with the infantry. And so I got to live vicariously through a few battle buddies of mine, as far as hospital life goes. But that's how I ended up as a medic in the Army. But it was actually very good for me, because during that time that I was in the service, I realized that I actually had a desire to care for people, or a desire to take care and protect or help. And so becoming a medic became quite naturally to me. I wanted to be the one they called on when they needed help. That's always been the type of person I saw myself as, someone who is dependable and able to come when you need at least someone there to lean on, kind of. And so as a medic, that turned out, you know, being perfect for me. And I became kind of one with my calling, if that makes sense. As much sure. as an 18, 19 year old can be, I knew I was a medic. I knew I was doc. And I liked that, and I loved it. And so I took it seriously. And in doing so, I became an E6 after about 8 years, I want to say, and which is good for that time as a medic. I don't know mm-hmm. what it is now, but it was good for medics during that time. And but I was on my second tour to Iraq. This time we were in Ramadi, Iraq. I just started missing my family, man. I wanted to be home with my family. I knew that I would be on this kind of merry-go-round. That's how I felt, like continue in and out of combat or back. This is my second time in Iraq. And I wasn't ready to accept that life for the rest of my life. And so I had a wife and three kids already at the time. So we made the decision while I was preparing to go into Iraq the second time. We were in Kuwait. that this will be my last hoorah, and we would just have to get out of the military and see what happens after that. And so that was in 2005, 2006. We were in Ramadi. We were under a tank battalion, the tank battalion or brigade. They were over the base and everything. And that's when I really got an up close look at what it meant to be a Marine. I said tank. I mean, a Marine battalion. Yes.
Okay.
Yep. The Marines, I got to live with them a little bit and realize that they really believe the hype about themselves. You know, they're crazy, man. And we had a lot of work to do trying to keep up with the Marines as far as medics.
Right.
We had a lot of work to do behind them. But it was a time that I grew up and had just, you know, a lot of real life experiences that taught me a little bit about myself and what I wanted with my life, and what I no longer wanted. And I knew one of the things I wanted was to kind of have some sort of freedom over my life, and so some sort of say over when I can go home and see my family. And so that did help me make the decision to part with the military after 9 years. And so after getting out, I did deploy four times, once to Kosovo, once to Saudi Arabia. We got to Saudi Arabia 2 days before 9/11. And then twice to Iraq. The first time it was during the initial invasion to Iraq in 2003, went over with 3rd ID. And then the second time in 2005, 2006 with the 1st Armored Division out of Germany again, we were in Ramadi. And so that was the kind of the culmination of my military deployment history, I guess, coming back in 2006.
Yeah, and that's actually interesting. You as a medic, you know, especially when you first got in, you probably weren't expecting all these deployments the way that you ended up with. And then you know, all of a sudden 9/11 creeps around, and then you're like, well, I'm in it right now. You know, you're pretty much expecting that you're going to be seeing some stuff at that point.
Exactly. I knew I was going to be a part of history, man. Sure. Not that I was looking forward to it, but I realized, like, oh, this is separating me from, I don't know, everything else that I always thought about myself. Now I'm about to go into battle and hope I can come out.
Right. There's a bigger purpose behind it.
When I joined. Yes. No, it wasn't. It was a time of peace. 98. It was a lot of happy times going on. I thought everything was going to be good. No way we were going to go to war.
Right.
So I didn't know we would have two going on at the same time.
Yeah. And you said you were in Ramadi 2005, 2006. My brother actually was in Ramadi around that same time period. And he was with the Vermont Army National Guard, and they were also kind of attached to the Marines in some way, shape or form. I'm not entirely sure how. So
they were in charge there.
Yeah, I'm sure that's probably how that all they probably got there and just said, no, this is our place. We're in charge. So, but no, that's cool. That's interesting how many people that I've ran into over the years have kind of crossed paths in one way or another with people that I knew, you know, who are in one place or another. So that's kind of neat. So that's a little bit about your military background. You know, you basically joined out of high school, you know, looking for, you know, a career path, and then you end up finding your calling, you know, helping out people. And then 9/11 happens and you realize that this is serious now. And you know, not that it wasn't before, but it got real, real quick.
Yeah. You know? We're loading real bullets now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And those wounds that you're treating are not, yes, you know, on a dummy or in a classroom setting or whatever. It's the real deal.
Real lives now.
Yeah, for real. Yeah, exactly. So, and then you decide to get out, you know, to be more with, be around your family and things like that. What did the transition look like for you? What was that like when you eventually decided to get out?
Mm-hmm. It was a simple transition in one way. In the other way, it was very difficult because we were stationed in Germany at the time, in Baumholder, Germany. And so transitioning from Germany to America, there was a lot of things that needed to happen. That wasn't the difficult part. The difficult part was talking to my battle buddies about what the future held for me. Like there wasn't a lot of positive stories of veterans coming out, going home, and living the time of their lives. You know, it's hard out there. It's rough. You got, you know, you don't know what it's like, especially coming in at 18, straight out of high school from my parents' house, and then being pushed into the world at 27, after being kind of cuddled in the sense of they, you know, TRICARE. We had TRICARE. We had, the food was always there for me. I didn't have to worry that much about rent because I had some place to stay. So coming out with a family of, it was five of us at the time, I realized how much I depended on the military for the provision for my family. And that I didn't see that at first. I thought everything would snap into place the same way it does as soon as we move to a new base. Right. But it didn't happen that way. So I got out and ended up, one of the elders at my church, I started going back to church once I got out, he just asked if I would come into the prisons with them because he knew I had been to Iraq twice and he knew that I might be able to encourage some of the inmates. Really, he was trying to recruit me to become one of his team members to go into the prisons with them, which it worked. I ended up doing it for 2 years. I fell in love with that. And that really connected. That really showed me more of my identity. And by that, I mean, it helped me see that, wow, I really do like helping people. Now I'm not helping in this medical way, but I'm helping these inmates who are cut off from the world or feel disconnected or whatever, at least feels like someone cares for them, you know, during their time here while they're separated from everything they knew was normal. And I identify with them a lot because of the military being deployed. We're separated from everyone. We have a you know, a time to get up, a time to get down. We go through the line, get our food. We go back into our little, you know, wherever we're at, another shack.
It's very much like the prison, like being in prison.
Unfortunately, yeah. So I identified with them, and I was able to connect with them in that way. Fortunately, I never had to spend any nights behind bars, so I couldn't communicate or identify with them in that way. But from the standpoint of the way I saw some deployments, the way I felt during some deployments, and so anyway, just being with them and talking with them and started building relationships with them, I had the opportunity to use my GI Bill. I was working as an electrical apprentice. Once I got out of the military, I went back to Memphis. I started working for Shelby Electric Company. There's a bunch of great guys there. They were just kind of construction worker type electricians going out, putting up poles on the road. If tornadoes come through, they will be the ones come out with the big trucks and put them back up. And so there was a 5-year program, 5 years on a job training as an apprentice. After you pass the test of the 5th year, you become a full fledged electrician, making what was good money at the time. And so that was what I thought I would be doing. And on the side, I just started going to the prisons to just communicate with these inmates and everything. And it came to a point where I began to want Saturday night. That's when I would go on Saturday nights. I wasn't a big party animal, if you can tell. Like, I would go on Saturday nights to the prison to hang out with inmates. And go out there and hang out with inmates and then wait an entire week until Saturday night again. I just wanted to get back there because I felt alive there. I had a purpose again. I think that's really, you know, kind of connected me back to a purpose. And the more I realized it, the more I saw the opportunity to use the GI Bill. Before that, I had never wanted to go to college. I had never thought about college. But now I saw an opportunity to, I can become a prison chaplain. And then I could do this full time. And so that was the mentality I had when I first enrolled in college in 2010 at the age of 30, that I'm going to do this so I can become a prison chaplain. And that was 4 years. We stayed in Chattanooga. We left Memphis, moved to Chattanooga for 4 years. I got a story, man. we stayed in Chattanooga, for 3 years. And graduating at the end of their graduation, I got a bachelor's degree in theology. And at the end of that, the interviews had come up and there was an opportunity to interview for a hospital chaplaincy internship. And in my mind, like, hospital chaplaincy, prison chaplaincy, this may help me get into the prisons. So I interviewed for the chaplaincy position and I was invited to be a part of the program. The program consisted of 1 year in Orlando, Florida, at a very nice hospital, as a hospital chaplain intern on the job training. So I'm familiar with that world now. So I do that for a year. and it was good. It was good for me. It allowed me still to give, like, my caring. I was able to still provide this help and this care. And at the end of that program, they offered to pay for my graduate degree to get a Master's of Divinity, so that, and then I would work for them for 5 years afterwards. So essentially they say, well, you did really good here. This internship, we want to, you know, bring you on as an employee full time. And my wife, she was like, yo, I was like, that's great. You know, there's a job right here. They're going to pay for higher, more education. So let's do it. And so they sent me to Michigan, Bering Springs, Michigan, where I did my graduate degree at Andrews University from 2014 to 2017. We're getting here. And there is, I did the MDiv and a few other things I studied for. And at the end of that 3-year period, I was invited to interview for one of the hospitals in this program. There are 44 hospitals throughout the U.S. and 4 of them was in Chicagoland. And I loved Chicago since I was a kid, primarily because the Bears and the Bulls growing up, those were the teams. Right. And so I always just loved the city of Chicago. And so I interviewed for a Chicago opportunity. I was invited to work here in the Chicagoland area. And I did that as a hospital chaplain for 2.5 years, working towards that 5. But I never made it to the 5 because the past started to creep up on me, man. So as I was working in the hospital, there was a lot of, you know, of course, trauma, death, a lot of things that the chaplain is called to the bedside to be there for. And in my mind, I can do this. You know, I'm used to being there for people. I've sat beside soldiers, you know, when the battle buddy was going, or, you know, I've been in that world before as a medic, and now I know I can do it in the hospital. And it would never occur to me that it would be a problem emotionally. Mm-hmm. But after about a year of doing that full time, being in the hospital with so much trauma, so much anxiety, like, is this person going to live? It was always that it's kind of like high alert, even more so in the hospital at all times because of different patients and things. And so it just began to wear on my emotions. I began to lose patients at home. I was totally not who I knew myself to be, or who my wife or kids knew myself to be. And I started going to counseling through the VA, started reaching out, doing these services. And it was during this time that I did find a good counselor. So that I did go through a few of them. Mm-hmm. And now the counselor I'm with now is the one that I've been with for the longest time ever. It's been over 1.5 years at least. I don't know if that's long for many people, but that's long for me.
It's pretty good that you found one that you can stick with for that long. Yeah.
Yes. And we, you know, we talk and that has been very helpful for me for dealing with the past, the things that kept creeping up on me while I was trying to work. And so I resigned from the hospital January of this year, right before COVID. So I'm so happy I did, actually, because I don't know how I would have survived in the mental state I was in, along with now the whole world is dying and going crazy, like there's a pandemic. And right. So I was just so, once I got out of the hospital and then March came, and I saw like how big this thing became, and people couldn't even leave the hospitals because they didn't want to bring the potential diseases home or the potential bacteria home or whatever. So I was just grateful to be out of the hospital, but I didn't have a job, and the wife, she didn't like that. It went well for my mental health for a little while, but you know, eventually it starts going downhill also. Sure. So I did end up finding another job that was equally helpful for others as well as pays the bills. And so I'm working now at an alternative school in Aurora, Illinois, called Core Academy. And I work with high school students who aren't allowed to go to public schools anymore. So they aren't the model citizens, but they're still good kids, and I get to work with them, and I get to you know, just to be a part of their lives. And we only have 1 or 2 kids in class now because of COVID. Mm-hmm. But when it was a full school, there was full classrooms of kids that appreciated a young Black man, you know, spending time with them, talking to them, letting them know that, you know, that I value them. And so that was something I found in immediately leaving the hospital that I fell in love with again. So that's where I'm at now for employment.
Yeah. So, and you, are on this trend of just helping people like that. It just seems like it's just like pouring out of you. Like ever since you joined the army, it's like you just want to go and help people.
It started, man.
And that's sort of what it seems like what you're doing with Vet Park. You know, is you're looking for ways to help veterans. And so why don't you tell us a little bit about Vet Park, what it is, you know, who it serves and what the purpose behind it is and how it came about.
All right. I'll do my best, man. It's been in my mind for at least 3 years, I'll say. It's been in my mind for at least 3 years, and it's changed, of course, over the years. What it is, what I initially planned for it to be is something that we see with a Wounded Warrior program or some of these other newer veteran service organizations that are finding ways to build community for veterans. That's what Vet Park was initially going to be. However, after kind of building plans and things, I found Wounded Warrior Program and I started participating in their programs and I loved it and I didn't want to recreate what they were doing. And so I kind of set Vet Park back down. But I was having a conversation with a friend of mine who's also a veteran and talking to her about the way art has helped me and talking to her about the way music or drawing or writing, all these things are things that help me feel whole again. It helps me kind of come alive. And we were talking about how art does help people with PTSD or traumatic brain injuries, art therapy. And so mm-hmm. I started looking into art therapy and realized that that I had kind of stumbled onto something that research has already proven is helpful. And so as I was looking more and more into art therapy, I started trying to find programs. I wanted to participate because I was still at the time working in the hospital, going through my depression, going through those hard times. And I was looking for things to give me joy again or to help me come alive. And anytime I did anything creative, I felt that aliveness. And so I was looking for programs that offered veterans an opportunity to do that. And I ended up coming across Creative Vets, which is a program. They're here in Chicago and they're also in Nashville. They're going around the US, they're spreading. But they are a program for veterans. They help veterans get connected with the arts. And so I connected with them. I went to one or two of their programs. I loved what they were doing. And I started finding other programs similar to that around the US. And so I started, you know, just looking at them and seeing what they were. And one thing I realized was they were all nonprofits and they were all consistently in need of funds. They were consistently in need of funds because they're nonprofits. They rely on donations to help veterans. And there are plenty of Americans, you know, that want to help veterans and are willing to provide that support. But what I also realized was that it's kind of like a buckshot right now, whereas there's many in different cities, different areas, there's many different veteran service organizations, and they're all in need of money. They're all kind of fighting for that same donation from these corporations or from people or from the government, whatever it may be. And so in that way, they are helping, but they may not be doing their best because of funds.
Right.
And so I didn't want to do something that would be another cog in that wheel as far as being a donation base. I wanted it to be something that would be helpful for veterans while also being a for-profit business. And I just started looking for some of the most lucrative areas in business. And one thing I came across was entertainment, and this was before COVID. And I realized that people will always need an outlet for entertainment, whether it's music, and no matter what type of music, whether it's art, whether it's shows, whether it's theater, whether it's barbecue cookout fest. We naturally have this within us to be creative, to be outgoing, to do things, kind of.
I mean, as far as the events go, I definitely agree. I mean, it's a great way for people to connect, listen to the artists, you know, especially, yes. You know, in a music, like a concert or a, you know, a festival type thing or whatever, you know, it's a great way for people to come together and experience that thing together. You know, have that shared experience.
Exactly. Thank you. One thing that I realized as I was looking at this, I've always been a fan of the hippie movement, the free love, the one love, the Bob Marley. I've always been a fan of those flower children because they appear to only want everyone to just get along and be happy, right? And so as a kid growing up, I just always thought they were cool. I was like, those are the people. That was the generation I should have been a part of. I should have had the afro when I got dreadlocks. Dreadlocks are new afros, by the way. I should have had the afro with the Jackson 5, like, you know, just being groovy. Because that's, I don't know, for some reason, I feel like that's the generation I was supposed to be a part of. But things like Woodstock, I realized that it brought people together. And when people came together, they came not only to party and have fun, but they enjoyed themselves. They had a good time. And that's what I wanted Vet Park to be. And so as I thought about it, I realized that Vet Park is set up to be, to become a entertainment company, one that is able to host events that will bring people out no matter what walk of life they come from. If they want R&B, we may have an R&B show in the city. If they want country, we may have a country show in the city, just depending on what it is. And we're able to be flexible and move Vet Park from place to place. Vet Park is wherever people come together to celebrate for a purpose of helping our heroes heal. That's what Vet Park is. I should have probably started there.
No, that's good. Yeah.
Yeah, it's wherever we all come together, our banner is going to go up. At that moment, that's Vet Park, and we came here to help our heroes heal. And so the idea is that we come there, we party with the purpose, and then we go home. People are going to go to concerts anyway. They're going to go to plays anyway. They're going to go to art galleries anyway. But what if they were able to do it knowing that the dollar they're paying, some of that is going directly to help veterans get connected with these alternative therapies? And so as I saw the problem of nonprofits needing more funding to help as many vets as there are, and then I also saw that there was plenty of money in entertainment, I just tried to find ways to balance those two. And that's how kind of the business model for Vet Park came up. Looking at companies like Tom Shoes, and there are others that I can't think of now. I know there's water companies where if you buy a bottle of water here, they'll send two bottles of water to some nation, that doesn't have a lot of water. And so essentially what you're doing is you're not just buying water, but you are supporting your cause as well. And so this new business model that I'm seeing trend throughout, you know, this disruption tech era, is those that are attached to causes. And so I realized that the cause that was on my heart was helping veterans get connected to these things that brought me back to life. And so just more and more conversations with different people talking about it kind of helped to solidify the idea of what the business model for Vet Park would look like. Mm-hmm. Our first event was scheduled for April 22nd, which was my 40th birthday. It was a party. It was a gift to myself, and I guess God didn't like that. He was like, "You don't need that, son. Go sit down." And so COVID came and shut that all down. Right. And so we have had an event. It wasn't what was planned. It wasn't as well attended as planned, but it was something I really forced because I wanted to have an event. And because of the way we are. And so now we are, it's myself and a friend of mine, Kanye, as we met in basic training and remained friends throughout our military career. He just retired last year. We're looking at some other options for pivoting it right now, just to help get the ball rolling.
I was going to ask what type of events, or how is COVID really impacting that? So how is it that you're pivoting, and what's mm-hmm. the goals for that?
Yeah, the pivot right now is a great idea. And I don't want to share it. Like it's probably already happened or somebody's probably said it, but I don't want to ever feel like I shouldn't have said anything until I knew exactly how I was going to do it.
No problem. Yep. No problem. Yeah.
But we are still planning events. And of course, because digital events and those are kind of things that are happening right now, I'm trying to learn. I'm not that fond of digital events myself, but I know that some people are. Mm-hmm. But I kind of have to feel it myself to want to do it and put the energy or effort into something.
And that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't start that way. Right. At least not with the events part. But we have other ways we're raising capital and raising revenue. Another way we're doing it is with our Healing Heroes campaign. And what our Healing Heroes campaign is it's 6 months where we promote one particular type of alternative therapy that's available to veterans no matter where they are in the U.S. And our first one, because this is our first Healing Heroes campaign, I call them HHCs, just to connect that with, you know, the military, Army, headquarters, right, and headquarters company. But HHC-001 is helping our, using art to heal hearts. And so it's a focus on art therapy. And during our Healing Hero campaigns, what we do is we choose one veteran-focused nonprofit that is providing this type of alternative therapy, in this case, art therapy. And they are geared directly for veterans. They're in place because they want to support veterans. So we commissioned an image to be drawn by a U.S. Army. Well, this one was a U.S. Marine. Okay. He drew the image for him. We commissioned him. He got paid on that end. He's a veteran. And now we are putting that image on items to sell. And so now when we sell these items, it will go towards a program that the art is Creative Vets, the same art therapy program I was introduced here. They're the first nonprofit we're supporting. And so anytime we sell a product with the Kintsugi heart on it, it goes, the profit goes towards the Creative Vets Art Box program, which is a program, okay, they start to do now because of COVID. They can't have their classes anymore. And so they're doing online classes and they're sending art supplies to vets throughout the US. And it's going well for them. And one of the ways that I saw the help Vet Park could help is by choosing this image, this item, and anything that we sell with their image on, those profits go directly to Creative Vets. And so to help their art box program. And so that's how the HHCs help to kind of fund things for veterans until we can get these events off. So right now the organization we're sponsoring is Creative Vets. With anytime we sell a Kintsugi heart image, which is right now just a t-shirt and a sticker, I think we have, those profits go to that. And then also we're working with a few veterans to start selling some of their things online as well. And so it's a Etsy specifically for veterans, for veteran creatives. Yeah, we're inviting veterans to participate to create their own pages. And then we go and find the audience for the veterans. And so now we bring the audience there, and if they can make the sale, they make the sale, and Vet Park takes a bit of commission for that, just like they would do on Amazon or Etsy or anything like that. And so finding ways to employ veterans and get and help veterans feed their families. A lot of the guys that I know that I've met on this walk through the VA, through the PTSD, are having a hard time keeping typical traditional 9-to-5 jobs, not because something is wrong with us, but because we see the world totally different than most Americans see the world because of our experiences. And so we don't fit any longer within their boxes, and, you know, they get uncomfortable and we get uncomfortable, and then it just mess happens. And so a lot of my battle buddies, guys I've been meeting around here in Aurora, aren't able to keep jobs, but they have these crafts, they have these hobbies. They might be a craft, they may brew craft beer at home. And if mm-hmm. it's legal to sell, then Vet Park is gonna find a way to help you sell that craft beer to a larger audience. And so that's what we are gearing Vet Park up to be, a platform for veteran creatives to be able to make a livelihood on it. And so now the American public, whereas before they had thousands of organizations they could choose to give money to, now we are creating a opportunity for them to exchange funds for something they want anyway, or something they want to give that will help, one, a veteran who made it, to the Vet Park, which I still hadn't got to the biggest part of the way we help veterans either, which is our alternative therapies fund. Okay. And so that's another thing that we're doing here. And so every aspect of Vet Park is meant to provide veterans with an opportunity to get a piece of the American pie in that sense, in the sense of entrepreneurship. I'm a big, I said earlier, like I need freedom. And that's something else I realized while I was working at the hospital. And even now in my 9-to-5, I am an artist, I'm a creative myself. And I enjoy the flexibility of being able to move around. And as long as I'm gainfully employed, you know, I want to be able to do it. But entrepreneurship is something that I'm passionate about as a person. So I'm trying to encourage as many veterans as possible, like you and your show, right? This is something that I know some podcasters, this is their therapy. This is the way they, by talking with veterans, connecting with other people, this is the way they heal for themselves. And so
for sure,
we want to have a place for even in like veteran podcasts. I mean, I'm sure there's out there a place where anyone can go and just type in veteran podcast and find it. But Vet Park will be that place that any American wants to find anything they want to find. Vet Park is a place they can look first, especially if they're looking for a veteran perspective or wanting to support our heroes. And that's our tagline, helping our heroes heal. Because anything we do and someone else does it with us, they are also helping our heroes heal. And so that's the idea. And that came from a lot of pain on my part, meaning going through PTSD and trauma, depression, and finding things to help, but also understanding that as a chaplain, I one of the things I had to learn was emotional intelligence. I had to learn empathy. I had to learn how to be emotionally available to recognize when someone else may be hurting and not, they don't even realize it themselves. And so right. In doing that, I realized that no matter where we're from, and we learned this in the military, we are all the same and we all want basically the same things in life, and that's to live a good life in peace. And it's a part of the American dream to the pursuit of happiness, right? That's at the end of the day, no matter where any of us is from, we all have that goal in the back of our mind somewhere. We're trying to pursue peace and happiness. Even Thanos, he went about it a different way, and it's, you know, but that's what he was pursuing. He was pursuing right. peace. That was his way of doing it. And so just as individuals, there are things that does connect us as humans. And one of those things many of those things are addressed through alternative therapies, whether it's talk therapy, whether it's music, art, equine, nature, hiking, fishing. Those things connect us back to the humanity in us, the person who we are, I don't know how much to, like who yeah. we are outside of our boxes that we've been placed in. And so that's why I'm all for alternative therapies. I can't just stick with like art therapy. We got to go talk about music. We got to go talk about people who ride horses for therapy, because there's a connection they have with those horses. And it may be 100 people in this room and 90 of us may really feel good after drawing a picture, but it may be 10 of us who needs an animal that'll help us heal, or may right. need to go underwater. And so just providing these opportunities for veterans to find out about these alternative therapies, first of all, is the first step that we're doing. But the next step then is providing funds. This is the big way we're helping, that we're building up to and gearing up towards, and which is Vet Park Alternative Therapies. And Vet Park Alternative Therapies is a fund. It's the charitable arm of Vet Park. And what we do is we take a percentage of each dollar that's made in Vet Park, where no matter where it came from, and we put it in our alternative therapy fund. And at the end of the year, we look at it and say, this is how much is there. And then for the next 12 months, we find ways to give that money to either veterans or veteran organizations that provide alternative therapies for veterans. And so just because I know Creative Vets, I'm just keep plugging them away. They would
and I'll have a link to them in the show notes too. So you know, okay, keep plugging yeah, away. That's cool.
Yeah, they provide songwriting classes. If you like music, if you want to get into a country music songwriting class, they help veterans go to Nashville, spend some time going through processing their emotions and everything. They put it in the song, and then they help them record it there in Nashville. Or if it's art, they're doing their art box programs around the country. And so Creative Vets would be one of the organizations, we would provide a grant for. We wouldn't provide scholarships. We provide a grant for them. And what our grants will do will cover at least one class, one session for them. So at least one of those sessions that Creative Vets has that year will cover, we will pay for a session that they can invite anyone. They don't have to worry about funding it. They don't have to worry about getting any cash. This will be essentially Vet Park's Creative Vets class. Because we're funding it, that's all. But that way we are helping them complete their mission of providing their service to the veterans. while also helping veterans get there without being concerned about funding. And then the scholarships. I told you this has been in my head a long time, and we're working with it, and I found, I mean, the right people are coming to help make this reality. But the scholarships then are for veterans that would like to go to classes, to go to some type of therapy, but it still requires funds. It's not, there's no veteran organization in their area. They may want to go to a community college there in a rural area, and they want to go to a community college because they do music therapy classes, or they may offer something. And so that vet can reach out to Vet Park and say, hey, this is going on. We would then contact that organization, pay for that event for that veteran in their name, and allow the veteran to go there. And so that's what the scholarships are. And so once we're up and running full-fledged, the big kicker, the big motivation each year is getting these funds together so that veterans are able to receive these alternative therapies wherever they're at in the U.S., regardless of what the cost may be. Because there are organizations that goes deep-sea diving, and veterans are able to go, but the veterans can go free, but those organizations still have to pay for the equipment and everything they're doing. And so
free, there's no such thing as a free lunch, so there's still a cost involved.
Yes. Yeah. And so we are gearing up to be able to just make that a little bit easier for veterans to get in contact with those organizations. And so we're reaching out to different alternative therapies. Anytime I find a yoga instructor, I'm reaching out to them, because they know about holistic lifestyles. They know about alternative therapies, because there's more than, you know, what I know. Even I'm always finding new things. And again, I'm a flower child in my soul. I know that I'm connected with the earth, and the earth was put here for us, and we was put here for it. And I love it. And so, that's a part of my identity I embrace as well now. Like, I'm a nature lover, man. I really am. And so getting people back connected with their true human nature, whether it's through, again, music or nature or outdoors, excuse me. That's what Vet Park is here. And so that's why it has to be the tagline, helping our heroes heal, helping them get back to who they were before the military. I mean, we can never go back there, but there's a part of us that's still there. And that's the part I think that is crying for a lot of us to come back and embrace.
Yeah. And there's a lot of people, you know, talking about, you know, you don't always get back to where you were, but there's some people who come back, they get out of the military, or they come back from a deployment that was rough on them. And they've lost interest in the things that they used to do, whether it was, you know, a hobby or an activity, or, you know, whether it's art or music or, you know, things like that. They've lost interest in those things. And, you know, sometimes through going through this type of therapy, they can kind of work their way back to finding some joy in life and enjoying the activities that they're doing. So I think this is wonderful. You know, what you're doing, helping out these organizations, like you said, there's many organizations throughout the country, but, you know, working on a nonprofit status, you are basically relying on donations. And when those donations dry up for one reason or another, you know, there's only so much you can do at that point. As good of a place as your heart might be, if you're running one of these organizations, you want to help out everybody that you can, but, yes. You know, without the money, you really can't do that. So, you know, look, I like looking at this from a for-profit standpoint, where you're like, you know, if you want to be sustainable, you have to raise the funds. You know, it's almost like, you know, the, you know, when you're on an airplane and they say, you know, when the oxygen mask drops down, put your mask on first and then help others who might be around you. Right. Like if you're not taking care of yourself first and making the money, then you can't help other people. You know what I mean? So, you know, and you might want just you yourself, you might want to help out, you know, all the vets who are out there. But if you don't have a way of raising that kind of money, if you just have, you know, your regular job that you're making a salary that's good for you and your family, you know, it's putting food on the table, keeping the roof over your head and everything. But it's not exactly leaving room for helping out all the veterans who need the help. You know what I mean? So it's great that you're doing stuff like this and, you know, supporting veterans on all ends of the chain of this, you know, from creating the products, creating the artwork, and also with the donations and the scholarships and everything like that. It's wonderful.
We have the potential veterans. There are 21 million veterans in the U.S. We have the potential to have our own economy with the right organizational skills. And that's one thing veterans have, organizational skills, but I haven't seen it, at least the way I see it in my head, I haven't seen it done as far as really coming together. Because once again, we typically go in towards a nonprofit business model when we're helping veterans. And instead of being able to collaborate, we have to compete. Whereas a for-profit business, if your money is okay, you can collaborate, you know, and especially when you're doing something, you both have the same goal. Like I saw Burger King over in England or somewhere overseas recently encouraged their fans to go buy McDonald's just to keep, you know, their lights on and keep their workers working. So
I saw that too. And it struck me as odd until I dug in a little bit deeper to see what was going on over there. I was like, what is this craziness going on? You know, they're usually pretty fierce competitors, but
yeah.
And one thing, like you said, one thing that veterans are good at is organization. And I think I've never met a group of people who are more willing to go out of their way to help a complete stranger, you know, if they're another veteran, right? And so it just makes sense that we should be able to take care of our own. You know, the VA is great. The other organizations that are out there, they're great and they're doing all that they can, but they can only do so much. And I think all come together, we can really affect some change.
Because there are many of us, I'll say many of us, that have gotten back to a point in life where we feel as if we, you know, have control. I mean, and tomorrow, I don't know how I'm going to be tomorrow. I know that, I realize that. And so I won't say I'm good again. But since leaving that hospital in January, I hadn't been down, you know, I know it was because of the environment I was in. I needed somewhere that I could heal and continue to heal versus every day being pulled back down to death and trauma and everything. And so, I'm in a good place right now. And a part of that was not just leaving the hospital, of course, but these different therapies that I have found, especially like drawing. My wife, I like to write, I like to take pictures, I like to draw, and I want to start painting, but she won't allow me to go buy any paint material because I have so much photography material, so much drawing material. And I thought it was because there was something wrong with me. Like, I just keep jumping from thing to thing. There's something wrong, but that wasn't it. It was the fact that all those things bring me joy. And I found ways to get joy. And I want to do them all. And it's, and that's a part of the freedom that comes with art, especially like to be able to, you know, paint outside the lines and say it's beautiful still, even though 99.9% of people are going to tell you it's ugly. But it's art, so you know, voila.
Exactly, there you go. It's all in the eye of the beholder, right? It's like, you know, if you're looking at it and you think it looks good, then it looks good, and who cares what anyone else thinks about it?
That's it.
You know,
that's the mentality I've been trying to live now, man. Like, not of course I'm one for peace and love and unity, but at the same time I stopped allowing others' expectations of what I should be or shouldn't be as a man or as a veteran.
You know, so with all of this stuff, you know, you're talking about how, you know, organizations can kind of collaborate and things like that. And I know with my podcast, I know there's other podcasters out there who are doing similar things to what I'm doing. There's other organizations out there who are trying to help out veterans. And, one of the things I like to do, just like with your organization, I want to help promote those companies and those nonprofits, you know, whatever they are, I want to help promote them, because sometimes there might be veterans out there who just don't know that these things exist. Yeah. There might be people out there with a desire to help out veteran organizations, but they don't know which ones to donate to. You know, you don't always know, you know, is the money actually going to what they say it's going to go to and everything like that. And so helping out companies like yours and other nonprofits and other organizations that are out there. First off, I hope to help people raise some money, for their causes. But I, secondary or probably primary to that is to get the veterans who maybe don't even know that these things exist, these alternative forms of therapy. They might just think that therapy is, I got to go talk to a shrink and, you know, I got to go do this every week. And it's just going to be, you know, such a hard thing for me to do because I don't want to open up and I don't want to talk. Well, there's other things out there. That's not necessarily the only way. I mean, it certainly is a way of, you know, therapy. It's a form of therapy, but there's other things. There's, like you said, there's art, there's music, there's equine therapy. You know, there's all sorts of different things that are out there. And it's just a matter of getting exposure and letting people know that it's out there. So that's what I hope to do. Other podcasts, I should say, that are doing a similar thing to what I'm doing, I don't look at them as competitors. I look at them as just another person who's out there trying to help out veterans. And if they're successful, then more power to them, because that means that veterans are being helped. And that's ultimately what I'm looking for too. So, you know, I'm not about to, you know, rain on their parade or anything, you know, with whatever they're doing, because I want them to succeed, and I want you to succeed. And I want all these other organizations to succeed, because when we all succeed, veterans are succeeding. And I think that's really the important takeaway here.
You're right. And I'm glad you said earlier, because a lot of our buddies do come down hard on the VA, and I understand why, you know, a lot of people have problems with the VA. But at the same time, they have a really big job, the VA.
They do.
They have a really big job, and our country isn't equipped our country isn't equipped to provide all of this help that we really need. And so what I see happening is, here, this will keep everybody calm. Take some pills, go talk to someone. This is all we can do right now, because we got 1,000 more coming. And so that's kind of why I can still appreciate the VA, because they do provide a service. I still go to the VA. But these other therapies are available, and veterans need to know about it, and they can't get it from the VA. If they have insurance, some of these things aren't covered by insurance, and so they would have to pay for them once again. And so it's just one of my ways. It's just one of the ways that I'm trying to help. Like we said earlier, like, that has become a theme of my life, and I like it. I don't know. It's who I am. It really is who I am.
And I think that's a good place to be. I think that's that's a good person to be. That's a good type of person to be, and, you know, reaching out, helping out people, and always looking, it seems like you're always looking for ways to help out people. And that's I think the type of thing that we need more of in this world, you know, especially with, you know, all the stuff that's going on, you know, in this world where, you know, there's so much, you know, back and forth, bickering and fighting, you know, over, you know, petty stuff in some cases, you know, and in some cases they're more serious, but still, I think if we came together and put our heads together, try to figure stuff out, we might come to a better conclusion than name calling and pointing fingers and all this other stuff.
Yes.
So, you know, you know, I think everyone can take a page out of Robert's book here and be more like him and try to be more helpful towards your fellow man, and help out, you know?
I would appreciate that.
I think we all would too.
I'm sorry. Real quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
I know most people know this. I think military people know this. Mr. Rogers, one of the lessons that his mom taught him was always look for the helpers. That's what he ended up becoming, you know, in his life. And he has a story that's similar to many of our stories as far as his veteran background and everything. And so there's plenty of us out there that, as hard as we are, we still have this inside of us, that this desire to serve a purpose and serve humanity. And so that's what we're gearing the park up for them to be able to come and live and heal and help others heal.
Absolutely. And that's great. And I think, you know, serving a greater purpose, you know, like you were saying, is a great goal to strive for, especially for people who are struggling with finding their own a sense of purpose. Maybe you're just transitioning out of the military and you're feeling a little bit lost because, like you said, the military took care of a lot of that stuff for you. You know, your housing and your food and your medical and all that kind of stuff was all pretty much taken care of for you. Or it was made really easy for you, or easier anyways. I can't say it was all easy.
It was different challenges, but not these challenges out here.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, it's not like you're just thrown out to go figure it out all on your own, you know? Mm-hmm. So serving a greater purpose, if you can find that, whether it's through helping out other veterans or through serving your community or doing something along those lines, that can help you find your sense of purpose, your reason for being, really. I think that's a great piece of advice there too. Well, Robert, it has been an absolute pleasure speaking with you today. You're full of positivity. You're full of, sharing and helping out others. And I think that's a great thing to have. Where can people go to get in touch with you and find out more about Vet Park and how to help out?
Oh, thank you for asking. The website is our main place right now. It's www.vetpark.us. That's vetpark.us.
Yep.
But also I would encourage anyone with an Instagram account to follow us on Instagram, because what we do there is it's kind of like the icing on the cake. We share artwork, we share things that have been created by veterans on no matter where they are in the US or around the world. We share it on mm-hmm. our site, and in that way we allow the community to see what great things veterans are up to. But also we help veterans get a little feedback from the public about their work, and they are just gaining more confidence in themselves as artists and as creatives. And so everything I do is there's another reason behind it. And this is one of the ways I see helping. Before we're able to give money to people, we're able to support these veteran creatives and their things. And so I'm always just encouraging people to follow us on Instagram, because I have a good time curating. That's my museum. That's my art gallery, in a sense, curating the images and everything, and getting to know the artists. And so there are a bunch of great guys and gals that we served with that also has another talent and is using that talent to kind of help themselves deal with life the same way someone else may use other things to deal with life that aren't as helpful. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I just like to just get a lot of people to support them on our Instagram channel, especially.
That's awesome. Yeah. So I'll have links to both your website and your Instagram and your other social media, channels and stuff like that, all in the show notes. So anyone who's looking to find out more about Vet Park and want to follow along with some of the stories and other artwork and stuff, they can check out the Instagram page. And we'll have all that stuff in the show notes there, and that so that you can find it all there. So again, thank you for joining us and sharing your story and everything about Vet Park. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Scott, for having me on, man. I appreciate it, and hopefully we get to do it again soon.
Yes, absolutely. Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Drive On Podcast.